anybody here have a question for Stanton Freeman? Let me get over there, and we'll do about 10 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. What was Ted Koppel like? I think he was in Timbuktu. No. Oh, no. It was about a family in Minnesota, the abduction of the McGriffin family or something like that. And, you know, they showed nice green grass in Minnesota in the winter. You're not going to find it.
And that's Stanton T. Freeman going a little bit further about what Dick Clark Productions did to him. Another thing, Stanton, they did to you I thought was highly unfair was the Peter Jennings special.
Oh, boy.
And it appeared to me that there was two different specials going on there. The first part of that program looked pretty straightforward, and then somebody came in and talked to somebody or something.
Well, you know, that was a terrible experience, really.
It had to be.
Another one. I call it the Peter Jennings mockumentary. I mean, okay, I'm in Roswell. They want to talk to me. We go down to the art museum there, nice art museum, good setting. Guy asked me questions for over an hour. Good questions. This was a sensible, straightforward kind of discussion. I knew I was in trouble, though, when after we'd wrapped up, he said, Stan, don't you think if these things were real that half the academics and scientists would be working on UFOs? I said, absolutely not. Those who can do, those who can't teach. You know, and we talked about this earlier, that of course they wouldn't be going to academics. But we did over an hour interview. Turns out they interviewed 150 people. Only 50 of us made the cut. That included John Mack didn't make the cut. A whole bunch of PhDs, and I'll give you why I think they did this, but I got 20 seconds. They called me, and what was that word? An operator. Twice. They said the witnesses just came out of the woodwork. You know, there was nothing to it. And I was really angry because one was a personal reason. I had thought I'd do better with Peter Jennings. I liked his work. I'd seen a program he did on the Catholic Church in old days, and I thought he did a fine job on it. Also, we're both born on July 29th, and we were both dual citizens of the United States and Canada. So I thought I ought to get a fair shake out of him, you know, if nothing else. I'd forgotten, I checked later, Benito Mussolini was also born on July 29th. But here's the kicker on this show. They had a lot of money. They spent a lot of money. They came to the MUFON conference. John Shushu set them up with a whole bunch of people. They didn't use any of it. You know, they used Peter Davenport as if he was the only investigator in the country working on UFO stuff. Why do you interview 150 people for a two-hour show minus commercials? You know, that's not a lot of time. And so I have a conspiracy theory. Somebody said, how are we going to find out what these idiots in ufology know? Do they know anything useful? Are they going to expose us? Well, I know one way you could do it, says one of the guys. Give them a chance to be on a documentary with one of the big three news guys, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS. They all like to see their face on the tube. And so they arrange all these interviews. Like I say, 150. And, you know, as part of that, they asked me if I had any footage from television with me in it. I think I got loads of hunks of film, but I don't have time to go through that. Well, send it to us. We'll do it. I sent him 56 or 7 VHS tapes. They did send them back. What the hell did they do with all that stuff? There was some good stuff about Roswell on there, I'll tell you that. And so I thought it was disgraceful. That it really was. They attacked Roswell. They attacked abductions. They cut out most of what Bud Hopkins had said. They had Susan Clancy saying stupid things about why people think they were abducted, sleep paralysis and stuff like that. You know, Betty and Barney Hill were obviously sleeping when they were driving in New Hampshire. You know, what was the purpose of the show? You're right. The first part was very good. And the rest was, there was garbage. They should have, I was glad about one thing. It was only seen by 14 million people. The Unsolved Mysteries program that I had instigated back in 89 was seen by 28 million people the first time around and 30 million the second time. So there, Peter, take that.
Yeah, take it. I think your theory, your hypothesis about what they were doing is probably correct. And who at ABC knew about it and who didn't, that's another question.
That is another question. And, you know, people forget, in all honesty, there have been times in the past when the media have been asked to cooperate. The word uranium was forbidden to be used during World War II. We could not talk about Fugo balloons. They didn't want the Japanese to know whether they'd done any damage or not. And it's the kind of article that would have been picked up, you know, balloon explodes, family heard, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not that the media hasn't gone along. The New York Times knew about the Cuban Missile business. And Jack Kennedy once said he wished they had published it, because you know, then it would have stopped, yeah. You know. So, you know, it's not a conspiracy. There's no question the government's been lying, misrepresenting, and, you know, in short, not being honest with its citizens. Now, you asked me about Jesse Marcel.
Yeah, I was going to get to that.
Okay, get to it.
Yeah, okay, it basically is, why did he talk to you?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of people say, why did all those guys, and it's not just Jesse, a bunch of other witnesses, come running to you, Friedman? And the answer is they didn't. Jesse didn't come to me.
I know you seeked him out, and well, you worked at it.
Here's the kicker. I'm at a television station doing a promotion, three interviews, supposedly, concerning my lecture that night at Louisiana State University. And I'd done two, and the third reporter was nowhere to be found. This is before cell phones. So the station manager, who's arranged all this stuff, he knew the person who brought me to the station. He's apologetic. He's giving me coffee. He's looking at his watch. You know, where the heck is this darn reporter? And out of the blue, because he knows I have other things to do and I can't stay here forever, you know, out of the blue he says, the guy you ought to talk to is Jesse Marcel. And me being the brilliant investigator I am, I said, who's he? And his answer floored me. Well, he handled wreckage of one of those saucers you were interested in when he was in the military. What? Where'd that come from? You know, totally out of the blue, literally. I said, well, what do you know about him? Where is he? Is he alive? Yeah, he lives down in Houma. I'll admit, I didn't know where Houma, Louisiana was. I've been there since, and it's a pretty good-sized town. He's a great guy. We're old ham radio buddies. Give him a call. And then the reporter showed up, the one who had been late. So I did our interview, did the program that night, and things went extremely well. We had a great crowd, very friendly crowd. So the next day from the airport, I was there a little early. I thought, you know, I ought to give that a try. So I call information in Houma. This is before the internet, you know, you didn't go quickly. There was a listing for a Jesse Marcel, and I called him. And I used the name Bill Allen of the television guy, station guy. And so Jesse's one of the few people that couldn't deny he was involved. His name shows up in papers all over the place, even in China and in England and so forth. His picture's in a lot of papers, too. So he told me a story. He couldn't deny it, and he wasn't going to be a liar about it. Oh, I don't know anything about that, you know. And I came with a good reference, Allen. So he told me a story. He didn't know the exact date, though. I mean, he's the intelligence officer of the 509th in Roswell. So it's the kind of thing you sort of file. What am I going to do now? Well, what I did was, a few months later, I'm in Bemidji, Minnesota, and somebody comes up to me after the lecture. You ever hear anything about a crash saucer in New Mexico? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. I didn't tell him what I had heard, but so he tells me his story, and that relates, as it turns out, to the Plains of St. Augustine case. The guy who was the engineer, Barney Barnett. His first name isn't Barney, but Barney Barnett. And he had, the person who was talking to me, had Barney's niece, his wife's niece's number and address. So I took that information. I shared them with Bill Moore the next day, who lived in Minnesota. Bill had a third story. It was beginning to get interesting. There was an article in the Flying Saucer Review, an English publication, and talks about an English actor driving across the country in the United States, hearing on the radio about a crashed saucer in New Mexico, and thinking there'd be a big fuss when he got back to Philadelphia, and there was nothing. So that guy, his son lived in Canada, I guess, and Bill talked to him. Anyway, he got a date. It wasn't a trip you made very often. You can imagine what the roads were like back in 1947. You know, no highway system. It was a mess. Almost as bad as part of the road up here to Angel Fire. You know? And so I've talked to that actor. He's dead now, Huey Green. Anyway, he could pin down the date because it wasn't a trip he made often, early July 47. So Bill went to the University of Minnesota Library Periodicals Department, started looking in July 47, and there's the story. With Jesse Marcel's name, of course, and giving us a bunch of other names. Walter Hout, spelled four different ways, I might add. And Blanchard, and, you know, the whole crew. So from that point on, we spent about a year and a half tracking down 62 people. And in almost all cases, it was you called Joe, and you remember anybody else who was there. If you get him talking for 5 or 10 minutes, at first he'll say, oh, no, it was a long time ago. I don't remember anybody. You get him back into that time frame of reference. Hey, have you talked to Bill Smith or John Johnson or whatever? And a lot of the wives had Christmas lists, Christmas card lists. The military guys tended to stick together a bit. So we tracked down 62 people. That led to the first book, The Roswell Incident, by Berlitz and Charles Berlitz and William Moore. I got a percentage of the royalties, so they acknowledged my contribution, if you will. And Bill and I kept at it. By 1986, we'd found 92 people. And then I instigated the Unsolved Mysteries program, seen by 28 million people. And believe it or not, it was very strange. They didn't give out their toll-free number during the Roswell segment on that for some reason. There are two other short segments, a half hour in Roswell, and two other short segments. They gave it out for if anybody knows where somebody is, you know. And they got dozens of calls from people about Roswell. People heard about it from a neighbor, a cousin, somebody else had talked to them about it. So that led to Don Berliner and my book and so forth. But in no case were people running to us. And, well, sometimes you get lucky. But luck is what happens when you're ready for it. I check editor and publisher. There's a newspaper in Roswell. I didn't know that. Okay. I didn't know anything about Roswell. The Roswell Daily Record. So I call the record and explain, I'm looking for the editor from 1947. Long gone. What do you need? Well, I tell her, I've got this article. It talks about the base public information officer. I didn't even know the base had been closed for years already. A guy named Walter Hout, Hout. His name is spelled four different ways. And before I could finish the sentence, his wife works here. What? You don't expect a GI who was there in 47 to still be there, you know, in 80, at 79. And I talked to his wife, and I talked to Walter. He had a base yearbook. So you can say I was lucky. Another time, I want to find anybody named Brazel. And again, I call information, no internet. And, you know, only one area code for New Mexico at that time, of course. And you were always talking to somebody who was in the area code, not like today where they're off some next to some computer somewhere. And so you can ask questions like, is that a nice part of town, or things like that. I want to find anybody named Brazel. What city? I don't know, but southeastern New Mexico, I'd say. Well, I've got a William in Carrizozo. I said, is that in southeastern New Mexico? Well, I didn't know. Yes, it is. It turns out that was the son of the rancher. And I pass it on to Bill, and he called him. And so he had tried that like 2 weeks earlier, and Brazel had just gotten his phone. So we lucked out, you could say.
Yeah, it's according to who you get as the operator. Very lucky sometimes. Some of these information operators, others overlook it.
Well,
we've tried that technique a lot.
Back then, you know, people who worked for the phone company then were different than now. They didn't have much competition, and they took themselves seriously. And I've had good luck back then. Sometimes today with the www.411.com, they can drive you up the wall.
Basically, Jesse Marcel talked to you and told you the truth, but he was reluctant. Would you say that?
Well, he certainly hadn't come running to me.
Okay.
And I talked to him later on. And then, because I was working on a movie, UFOs Are Real, he was one of the people we wanted to interview. So we visited him in Houma, Louisiana. I filmed him sitting right at his ham radio rig.
Hopefully the same thing will happen with this Magic Man movie.
Well, that's right, Magic Man. And what I'm hoping, look, let me give you another example of what I'm hoping for. I figured out that, gee, maybe Thomas Jefferson Dubose is alive, and maybe he's shown in the picture with General Ramey, with those pieces of junk on Ramey's floor, you know. I figured if he was a colonel at that time, he was probably a West Pointer, because they stayed in after the war. They didn't get out. So I called West Point, and yes, he was alive. And they didn't tell me exactly where he was, but it was in the South. Eventually, I found him, and I called him, and then I visited him. My folks were retired in Florida. He lived in Florida. So I met with him twice, and he said something in our last conversation. He liked the work I'm doing. If I remember anything more, I'll let you know. What can they do to me now? He was 87. So the kind of thing you're hoping for something like Magic Man,
I understand,
is somebody who will say, what can they do to me now? I typed the document, or I filed reports, or whatever. And the thing is that I found people are decent. For example, I would get people, find their picture in the yearbook, I'd send them a copy of the picture. That whole page would have people that they worked with, you know. They were grateful. And I swore I wouldn't use their name without permission and stuff like that. And I don't. So you have to respect people is what I'm saying, especially older people. I mean, I can say that now that I'm older, but, you know.
Dennis Balthaser, I always get his name wrong. Dennis Balthaser.
That's right.
Did I get close?
Close enough.
Okay, good. You have known Stanton a long time, and you're here in the audience. You're here with your own job. You're emceeing this time.
I am, and I'm finding it's a lot harder than just doing a lecture.
Yeah, you told me some time back that you were still working on it.
I am. I had to do all the bios, get the bios, and work up the introductions, and I'm looking forward to it because we got some good speakers this year, and it's a new experience for me. I worked with Stanton off and on for the last 12, 13 years, and I can relate to what he's talking about with the media problems, because him and I both had a situation with the National Geographic a couple of years ago where we spent hours taping with them, and the last thing the announcer said was that Roswell was a myth. So you never know what the editor's going to do.
He obviously had seen Peter Jennings' show.
I guess. I don't know. But
this program will be broadcast on Friday. Stanton, your speech is what time?
Friday at 7 o'clock.
So you have plenty of time to get down here. If you're in northern New Mexico, a scenic drive, to say the least, disregard what Stanton said about the highways. They're not bad.
No. And Southern Colorado, too. We look for people to come down from up in Colorado. We'll probably have some come up from Texas and over from Arizona. So we're looking for a good symposium.
And you have a question for Stanton?
No, just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, Stanton's an old media guy. He knows we got to sneak in a plug some way, Stanton. We just did it.
Well, yeah. let me give my website, www.stantonfriedman.com. You can get all my books with autographs, mind you, which you don't get from Amazon.com. No charge for the autograph. Yeah. That's right.
anyone else have a question for Stanton? We have but several people in the audience. Anybody have a question at all? You have one? Okay. They're all bashful. They don't.
I like my roast beef rare.
Stanton, it's always a pleasure having you on. Anything that we haven't covered we need to do?
No. I think what is important right now is to realize how important for people on this planet to begin thinking of themselves as earthlings instead of all those nationalistic labels. Nationalism has got us in one heck of a lot of trouble. That's what the wars are about. I've got a great-grandson. I'd like him to grow up in a more peaceful world than I've been fortunate enough to grow up in. And I think a big part of that is recognizing we're part of a galactic neighborhood, not just one country or one continent. And I'm hopeful. I'm an optimist still.
Thanks very much. And one final question about Magic 12. Something like that still exists, I'm sure.
Well, I'm sure the name has been changed. When classified names get out, you
probably
change the name.
Probably it's Magic 36 now or something.
Yeah, the whole point is you need an organization like that to be at the hub of that Western wagon wheel without a rim. The spokes bring information in, but not around. You need some place that has to coordinate the technical data you get from wreckage, the observational data you get from airplanes chasing UFOs, radar information, all that sort of stuff. Somebody to put it all together. I'm sure that group still exists. I wish they'd give me a call.
And you can find him on WWW White Pages, probably. Well, just go to your website, StanFriedman.com.
StantonFriedman.com.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Stan. It's always a pleasure. I'm Jerry Pippin. Roberta Scott's been our on-location producer. Jane Swartley is our web editor. Until next time, from Angel Fire, cheers.